It is a scam when you don't allow everyone to operate on fair terms.
We are the Robin Hoods of sports betting. We take something back from the rich bookies and enable our customers to beat them instead.
G'day everyone, welcome along to episode 4 of Sunday Streams with Trademate Sports, where we answer your betting questions, discuss both new and old betting strategies, show how to best use the Trademate Sports software, and welcome on guests from around the betting industry. Today I'm joined by the award-winning sports betting analyst Mark O'Hare, who is here to answer all of your betting questions. How are you, mate?
I'm good. I'm very good. It's international week in football terms, so I've had a quieter week than normal. So yeah, feeling quite refreshed for a Sunday night, where this is the kind of time where I'm ready to go asleep. But yeah, all good.
Well, this should be your best performance of all time, mate. You finally just like the players, mate. You've had a nice kip. You're ready to go, and yeah, you'll be fired up, ready to go. And for those who don't know, if this is a great time to get Mark on, because he's recently been voted as the best free tipster and the second best betting writer in the Smart Betting Club's 2021 awards. And then if you want to, you know, add a few along the side there, which I think you greatly deserve, you're also part of the Matchbook team and the Betfair team with your podcasting. And so Matchbook won the best podcast. Was it Betfair won the second best podcast, I think?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Second best video channel for Matchbook and the second best betting website with We Love Betting. So, mate, just a nice little six awards there.
Yeah. Quite flattering. Really nice to get your hard work sort of rewarded in that sort of sense. Very flattering too. We're up against some real heavyweights in the industry as well. So, yeah, nice surprise really. But yeah, I'll take it every day of the week.
Yeah, no, it's awesome, mate. And I'll just mention again to everyone, or I probably haven't even mentioned it yet, but yeah, start sending through your questions for Mark, and he can start answering away. But yeah, how in general have you been lately, mate? Just to get things kicked off, and how have you kind of dealt with COVID? Because I remember talking to you about a year ago when you first came on the podcast, and you were basically saying how, yeah, I'm not really interested in having, or at least I'm trying to stay disciplined, and I'm not having, haven't had a bet yet. I think that was in maybe May or April of last year.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because the Bundesliga was just coming back, I think, soon. There was Belarusian football, and a few other leagues had kind of carried on. But yeah, I kept my powder dry for the most part. Had a few sort of recreational kind of bets just for a bit of interest, and then once football kind of restarted, got straight back into things. Yeah, it has been reasonably tricky. I think the first issue everyone in the football industry is trying to work out was how big, how small was home advantage without supporters in the COVID era. That was the first conundrum to try and solve. Clearly, without a huge amount of data to go off, it was quite tricky to second guess that. And you know, you're getting sometimes fooled by the law of small numbers rather than the large numbers. But now we've got a decent base, and that's been a lot easier to kind of apply these days, kind of become a bit more of the normality now. I actually saw some people suggesting that these international games taking place at the moment, some stadiums, some countries are allowing select supporters into the ground, maybe not 100%, but certainly 35%, 50%, 75% in some regions as well. And the argument was, well, the opposition haven't played in front of a crowd for over a year now, so maybe they're going to be at a disadvantage. So, yeah, it's quite weird now, all these different kind of flavours coming into it as well. But, yeah, it has been tough, particularly in the sort of leagues that I like to specialise in. My main sort of bread and butter would be the four English leagues and then the four major European leagues. And I've always kind of backed myself in the sort of lower leagues in England, where the information, the data is available, the information behind the teams isn't so prevalent, and of a specialist in those leagues. But I found it really difficult in those leagues this season. In fact, you know, I've kind of been profitable in the EFL for five seasons or so, but I've had to scale back certain elements of things because my results weren't paying off there. So yeah, I had to adapt. I think most people have had to adapt some way, and I have as well. So yeah, it's been difficult, but hopefully normality is around the corner, hopefully, particularly in the UK.
yeah definitely, mate. All right, we've got, certainly got some questions coming in here from mentioned from Enoch here. He says, greetings from Ghana. Congratulations, Mark. I listen to your podcast and they are so informative. So you've got one fan tonight, mate. Tom Berry says, did Mark bet the unders in the Ireland game last night?
No, I didn't. I probably should have. I don't like to bet on team I kind of follow too often. I did at the weekend against Serbia and it didn't go too well. So I backed the unders in that game and it ended 3-2. So no, I didn't. Reason being just team news wise from the Irish perspective, the defence and the sort of holding midfield looked pretty weak. A rookie goalkeeper as well. And I think Luxembourg have come on a lot in the last 5 or 6 years. I didn't. Probably foolish too, looking back now. But I had a few other bets elsewhere, which I was probably more keen on.
Yeah. Did you catch the mighty Malta side who were up 2-0 against, is it Slovakia, I think?
Yeah, or... yeah. They got pegged back eventually. But yeah, great, really, because I think, I'm not sure if that was the same night, but there was a big argument going on in England who beat San Marino about how these minnows should have to go through pre-qualifying. A few high-profile Englishmen sort of banging that drum, and you know, in the space of a couple of days, you've had Malta going 2-0 up at Slovakia and picking up a point. Spain needed a last-minute goal today to beat Georgia away, and Luxembourg beating Ireland. So, you know, if you're outside of the elite, it's still very much game on.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Richard Garbutt says, with TradeMate, we use Pinnacle as the Bible of true odds or truest odds to find value elsewhere. Does Mark agree that Pinnacle is the most accurate odds on the market, or would he look to combine with any other?
No, I agree. That's certainly where I sort of look to see how I've performed against the market. When I talk about the market, I always look at the closing price of Pinnacle as the, you know, it's the be all and end all, really. I don't tend to look elsewhere. If I've had a bet out and I want to see how I've performed, regardless of the result of the bet, has it won, has it lost, doesn't really matter. I like to go and see what Pinnacle have done, what the price has done with Pinnacle and how it's closed compared to the price that I took. And that's kind of my validation or not, is whether it was a good bet or not.
Are there any other leagues or sports where you take into account any other lines? I mean, I assume like most of your betting is done, you know, on the biggest leagues in football, so you don't really have to worry about going outside of Pinnacle. But is there any of your betting where you have to go outside of the Pinnacle closing line, or you think there's a more efficient closing line?
No, not really. They're all pretty much covered. I mean, as I said, the bread and butter are the sort of eight leagues I mentioned. I've got data and a reasonable degree of knowledge from certain leagues outside of that, mainly just second tiers across those major leagues, really, and a couple of other sort of I wouldn't call them lesser leagues, but particularly, say, the top flights in Portugal, Russia and Turkey, which are still reasonably major, and Holland too, which you can get all that data and the prices pretty comfortably too. The only thing I would say is I've adapted this season, and I've adapted quite a lot towards cards betting. And obviously that's not easily sort of trackable against Pinnacle or anything like that. You've kind of got to do your own, tissue, if you like. And I've got a little model there, which I kind of value, and I've had some really good results off it. Got a few knowledgeable guys who have helped me with that too. So yeah, that's different. And I do see a lot of people sort of saying, oh, I've beaten the closing price betting cards, and it doesn't hold the same value at all, because the markets aren't anywhere near as liquid as the Asians or the total goals, etc. So that's probably one area which is still coming to the fore, really, in terms of football betting, is the cards market. And it's kind of, you've got to make your own decisions whether you're taking a good bet or not, depending on the closing price. Because the closing price is almost irrelevant in some soft books. If you're backing certain prices and certain odds, sorry, certain markets, I should say, as I say, the liquidity just isn't there to sort of say, you know, I've seen some people on social media say, I've taken this bet of, let's just say, you know, 20 plus booking points for team A, and I took it at 11 to 10 and shut at 4-7. And I was like, well, it doesn't mean a huge amount. You've got a decent price there, but you haven't really, like, you know what I'm trying to say here, Alex. It's not comparable to backing an Asian price.
No, exactly. And one of the things I always forgot to take into account is, yeah, you might get lots of money flooding in on Bet365 and, yeah, they might have all the money in the world there to try and create an efficient price, but it's not smart money. Like, we're not talking about Tony Bloom. We're not talking about Matthew Benham. Like, and that was something that I fell victim, I think, a year ago. I was talking to Marius or something. I was like, oh, should we look at Bet365 closing prices every now and then and see where they're at? He's like, mate, that could just be any Joe out there, like, putting his 2 cents on the game. Like, you'd rather, even if the liquidity's, you know, maybe even a little bit less on Pinnacle, like, you're much better looking at those kind of lines. So,
Yeah,
I totally agree, mate. And I wanted to talk about the card betting model that you came up with. How was that process, mate? Was that your first card betting model that you'd come up with, or your first model that you built?
Not really. I mean, I haven't got the technical skills to build them myself. I can kind of provide the data and provide the knowledge, but there's a couple of people who I trust in the industry who have got experience of doing it, and you know, it's almost like they'll scratch my back if I scratch theirs, so I can provide all the data points for them, and they've got the knowledge and how to build these kind of things. So yeah, it's kind of a 50-50 process in that regard. In terms of the cards, yeah, it's something that I kind of pushed and was quite keen to push. I feel like there's an edge to be had there, even if it is with the soft books and not for the millions of pounds, etc. It's quite a small edge, really, but kind of keep chipping away at it and seeing some really good success with it. And it's not particularly technical, but there's a few sort of interesting aspects to it, which I really like, and sort of we've been improving it. And certainly there's going to be a new version of it coming out in sort of the next 10 days, which I'm really excited to use when the football gets back up and running again. So just adding another layer, little things like we can grade it based on the, not just the referee, but the fixture in terms of, how would you say, like, obviously you can decide whether it's a derby and kind of increase the up it in terms of what your expectations are there, but also not just from a kind of that perspective, but also how important is that match? Is it, you know, top against bottom? Is it a six-pointer at the bottom of the table? Is it two teams vying for Europe? That kind of thing. So just adding little layers to it and testing and looking at the results, and so far it's been really promising. So yeah, quite excited about that.
Yeah, Richard Garbutt, and I'm sorry, I've just skipped over a couple of questions here, but it's kind of on the topic of what we're talking about. He's asking, what is betting in cards? So maybe you want to give a quick explanation of card betting.
Yeah, I can try. So there's very various different elements to it. It's very much, you know, basically just betting on how many yellow cards or red cards are going to be in the game. You can do it via certain operators have different rules for cards, and that's very important to know your rules when you're betting on cards. Certain operators will count a red card as just one, as being just one card has been shown, whereas others will display it as two cards. Booking points is the one I kind of like as well, because you get 10 points allocated for a yellow card and 25 for a red card, and to get your total booking points number, you just add all the cards and figures together, really. So there's various other ways you can do it. You can bet on team cards, you can bet on cards in the game, you can bet on card handicaps. It's getting bigger in the UK. I'm expecting it to get bigger and bigger as the years go on, really. I've certainly seen a few other operators adding that element to things as well. So it's still an improving market, but one I'm certainly enjoying playing. I don't know if there's something in my mentality or not, but I quite enjoy sort of just putting my feet up and having a decent bet on cards, watching a game unfold and just cheering on all the tackles and all the aggro, all the mouthing off to the referee, everything like that. It's quite fun, actually.
Yeah, no, definitely. How have your accounts gone? Like, how do the bookmakers, I guess, see cards? Are they seeing it as a segment where if you're betting on cards and making money nice and early, then we'll limit the accounts? Or how have you gone with that?
So there's a couple of tricks, I think, to the trade, and this is purely my interpretation of it, really. I think if you're backing certain card markets, let's take 365 as an example, they'll have a cards tab. If you're backing Asian cards over or under, just literally over and under the Asian line, I think you'll be flagged reasonably quickly if you're, you know, obviously having good success. So I think there is a way around it, and that's certainly how I've been trying to do it. And I don't want to give too many secrets away in case people are watching and start wising up to it. But if you go into the Bet Builder, I'm a firm believer that if any trader, any compiler, if they see business coming in Bet Builder wise, it doesn't look like good business whatsoever. So they're more likely to turn a blind eye to it. You can effectively back the same bet via the Bet Builder, just kind of chucking a different layer to it as well. And I'd like to think most of it goes undetected because they're not looking for people. They're not looking for smart people backing Bet Builders compared to, let's say, the traditional Asian card line, for example. So I think there's a couple of ways you can disguise yourself a little bit, and that's certainly how I try to do it. And at the moment, things have been okay. So touch wood, it carries on that way.
Yeah, very much so, mate. All right, Tom Payne says, oh, sorry, I've missed a question here. Sorry, Tom, we'll get back to you. He says, Enoch says, for a novice to betting, is it all about the stats or knowing the sport?
Good question. I mean, I get asked a lot, what's the most important stat or what's the most important data and how do I get this data to improve my betting? And there's no sort of magic piece of stats or data which is going to turn things from nothing to riches overnight. And the most important stat out there is the odds. And the only thing I can probably say is to just throw yourself, engulf yourself in odds and prices and understand closing prices and what prices certain teams are offering at in certain situations. I think data can help a lot, and I certainly use it to my advantage in the sense that there's no way I can watch those teams play from all those leagues every game, every season. That's where data can be your friend, and certainly you can look at the performance data and get an idea for how teams are performing. But XG data, which is all the rage these days, the edge in XG has just evaporated completely in the last 18 months or so. Certainly 3-4 years ago, we were onto something there, and it's quite a nice little moneymaker, really. But The truth is, any stat or data you have, the bookmaker, the operator will have as well. And I've been working pretty closely, sort of consulting with a guy who I really rate, a really experienced guy in the industry, former head of trading, and he's wonderful, really. I introduced him to XG data about 5 or 6 years ago, and now he and his company basically have access to the best data out there and stuff. So, you know, I know that whatever I have, he's going to have better data than what I have. So where really is going to be the edge there? Well, you've got to be creative about things. And I think I'm going around in circles here, but certainly one thing you can do in terms of if you've got XG data available to you, now I would say that season-long data is less valuable than, say, the form data in terms of XG. So if you can get your data organized to look at how certain teams are performing over the last 4, 8, 12, 16 games, whatever it might be in terms of expected goals, you've got a slight edge there over people who are just using season-long data. Because seasons are so long, football teams change and they evolve. Managers come in and out, players come in and out as well. So there's one thing you can do in terms of something that most people won't be doing. But the reality is, I go through my sort of data outputs compared to what the market is doing, and so does my sort of contact in the industry. And these days, there are so few outliers compared to what the data is spitting out compared to what the actual odds are, because at the end of the day, most operators now are using XG data to form their prices. So of course, if everyone's doing the same thing, there's not going to be any outliers. There normally are a couple, and then if you can sort of do your due diligence and sort of understand the team news, the schedule, the weather even, all these little variables can build it in, then maybe you've got something. But just literally just using one stat or one piece of data source is it's not ideal.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because, yeah, I mean, if you're just getting going and you want to use stats, it's like you have to ask yourself the question whether the stats that you have access to are better than what the bookmaker has. And in that case, you're talking about a bookmaker who's worth millions and, I mean, in some case, billions. So it's a tough hurdle to overcome to be more powerful than a bookmaker, I guess.
Yeah, and I think just the end of that question there, or knowing the sport, I think if you know your sport or you know your league, if you're specializing in a specific league or market, if you know it, there is definitely potential to get an edge. Whatever, it's hard to sort of quantify it, of course, but there's a great account on Twitter at the moment, Bet on Value, a Danish guy who's just a lovely, lovely guy, really, really accommodating and helpful. And if you just look at his tweets, it's a guy who's sort of specializing in non-major leagues or tournaments. So right now he's looking at football in the CONCACAF region, sort of North and Central America internationals, the African Cup of Nations qualifiers. And he's getting an edge over the market by simply just knowing more than the market does about squads that are being selected, permutations in terms of groups, the schedule. And you can see he's kind of sharing his bets on Twitter and sort of detailing them in just note form, literally just a couple of lines. And immediately you can go, yeah, I'm buying into that. And then you see the market compared to what the closing price is, what he's taking, and you can definitely see there's an edge there because he knows more than the market does at that specific moment, and people are reacting to it. So little things like I'm just plucking names out of a hat here, but Chad have already qualified, so they've got nothing to play for, so they're fielding a second team when they play Nigeria on Saturday. At the moment they're 2.0, they're getting offered 3.0 or bigger because the market hasn't reacted to the news that they're playing a second string this Saturday. Little things like that. It's just so basic, but so important. And you'll only kind of get those little edges in the sort of rough diamonds, if you like. You know, you're not going to get that in the Premier League because everyone knows everything and it's fastest finger first whenever that sort of news story does drop. So if you can be a specialist in a lesser league, there's definitely some good ones in there for you.
Yeah, no, that's terrific advice, mate. Tom, sorry, I'll get to your question now. He says, are you watching game after game or are you mainly a stats man when choosing your bets? Because there's lots of people like you out there and I'm fascinated. Another guy that kind of does similar things to you is Nigel Seeley, and I don't understand how you guys watch so much football in one weekend. either your missus is like, all right, yeah, just go for it. You don't need to speak to me at all this weekend, or you don't sleep or something. So how do you go about it, mate?
Definitely the former. she's quite accommodating in that sense. She understands it's my job at the end of the day. And I certainly have issues in terms of, I guess there's personality issues in terms of, I can be a bit obsessive. There's a bit of OCD about me as well. So I don't like to place bets or use my own money on if I'm not aware of the full picture, really. And I won't often place bets on teams I don't know anything about, just purely based on the stats I've got to hand, because as I said, I think there's more to it than just purely looking at stats and data, which, as we just talked about, the operator will have as well. So, yeah, but there's also a weird part of me where I like to see my bets play out, and that's not always possible. You've got 5 or 6 kicking off at 3 p.m. on a Saturday, but it does allow me to kind of build my knowledge on certain teams and certain leagues as well. I do watch a lot of football, but that can have its negatives as well. And certainly coming into this international break, I was absolutely sick of it as well. Just because it's just too much. It's on all the time. And as I say, I can be quite obsessive. So, you know, over a weekend, I might watch 8, 9, 10 games. And yeah, by Monday morning, you're kind of sick of it and need a bit of a refresh and reset. So it's not ideal. But it's a bit of a mix of everything: intuition, odds, data, and sort of seeing things with your own eyes. But goes back to it as well, about data being your friend. Like, I can't watch every team play every week, so you do need a bit of a helping hand. But it's also kind of scouring and kind of scouting as much knowledge as you can from certain sources too. So I'll try and watch highlights from most of the leagues as well. And obviously I've got a few trusted websites for team news and for various other bits and bobs as well. So managerial comments and that kind of thing too. So yeah, it's quite a difficult operation, quite a long operation, but it's made it more difficult this year with the condensed campaign. So, yeah, I mean, this international break was needed.
Yeah, so keep sending in your questions, guys. But I was going to ask, like, how do you deal with the off season then? So you've got let's just, what is it, two and a bit months of basically no football. I know we've got the Euros and stuff like that, but I assume you derive a significant amount of money like from the betting market. So how do you, is it about, I guess, the other 10 months, like just getting as much as you can, or is it, or have you got other ways that you approach your betting on those months off?
Not really. I mean, there's some summer leagues which will carry on. Scandinavian leagues, for example, we'll kind of go through the summer, the Irish league now as well. But quite often, if it's a non-tournament year, it's an opportunity to rest, refresh, and travel. So just get away from it all, refresh the mind, which I think is really important. So you know, we talked kind of just after lockdown last year, and I remember saying to you actually, for the first sort of 3-4 weeks, I absolutely loved it because there was no football on, and there was nothing to distract you. It was just purely an opportunity to kind of rest, and the weather was great here in the UK, so I was just chilling out for a couple of weeks, and it was amazing, really. And that's what I try and do, really. My other half is Australian, so during a non-international tournament, we'll probably go over to Australia and spend some time with our family and whatnot. But yeah, there's always something on. I'm sort of big into my rugby as well, so the league season goes through the summer as well. So there's always something to kind of keep me hooked. But and I'd say probably a month before the new season begins, that's when I would start my prep for anti-post punting as well. I like to kind of provide myself with a decent dossier on each team, certainly in the UK, in the lower leagues I was talking about. So yeah, that kind of use probably a week for each division to really sort of focus on and plan my anti-post punting as well. So it's only really about a month where I'll kind of be twiddling my thumbs a little bit, but
okay.
Yeah, there's always something.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you mentioned, betting on the rugby league. Is that something that are you trying to have a crack over in Australia too? And if so, like, how are you approaching that, mate? Because I'd love to. I mean, I love talking about rugby betting. Let's talk too much about football all the time.
Yeah, it's not too scientific. I've got someone who's got a model, which I'm not sure how. I don't know. This is where it kind of falls down, as I don't have the knowledge of what's going into that model, so I'm not sure how to sort of approach that. But I like to sort of, this is where I'm going to sound really, in my mind, amateurish, but it's more hunch-based than anything else. I do like my stats, but certainly with the NRL, it's so competitive. Majority of the time, you are going to get a few hosings handed out. More often than not, it's kind of hunch-based, which yeah, probably doesn't sound too good. But in the UK, I've got basic stats here. But again, it's going to come down to just how those two teams are going to sort of play out the schedule, what I've seen before, what the coaches are talking about, certain positions, how much you value certain players in certain positions too. I mean, I've had some decent success with the NRL in the past sort of 18 months or so, varying the success in the Super League. I've just found I'm a rugby union guy from sort of being a young guy, but the older I'm sort of getting, the more I'm sort of switching towards league. I just think it's much more of a watchable sport these days. Yeah. And obviously the high scoring nature makes it much more appealing from a punter's perspective too. So yeah, had the Tigers to win away at the Knights this morning in the Super League, or your night, if you like, Sunday night, which I think was going a little bit against the grain. Mitchell Pearce.
In the NRL, you mean?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay, so, you said the Super League. So I was like, oh, would be very strange if there was the Tigers and the Knights playing on the exact
Sorry, yeah. The Super League just started this weekend, so I've been had my eye on a few of those games as well. But there's no real major scientific approach to that at the moment, but football is always priority.
Yeah, no, awesome, mate. All right, Enoch has, so you've talked about this a little bit already, but can you mention any of the credible websites you use for stats and also lineups?
Let me think, try and give you the best one possible. So I've got websites really for each league. In Europe, Stats, Soccer Stats is basically my sort of Bible for your bread and butter stuff, your sort of raw stats, I like to call them. League tables, form tables, goals data, when those goals were scored, all that sort of stuff. everything you kind of want from a recreational perspective to have a bet should be on Soccer Stats. In terms of team news, they're all of my favorites, you see, so I don't actually remember what the names of the websites are. I just click on what I've called them. I think it's called Premier Injuries or something along those lines. Certainly if you put in Premier League injuries or something like that, it'll be one of the first results. I can't remember the actual name of it, but I've found in the last sort of 2 years or so that a lot of the best websites for projected 11s team news are fantasy football based, and I'm not much of a fantasy football punter, so yeah, I don't really play it too often, but these guys are obsessive over it, and obviously it's very, very important that they get to know who's playing and what positions, etc. And fantasy sports is huge in America, and it's getting bigger and bigger over in the UK at the moment too. So so I've got a couple of websites for, let's say, La Liga in Spain, which is very similar. It's run by a sort of fantasy sports company. It's just a case of using your sort of add-on tools, like free translation tools and stuff. If you tweet me after, I can probably reel off a couple. I just don't have the names to hand because, as I say, they're all stored in my favorites, so I don't actually remember the names of the websites. Just click on icons.
Okay, fair enough. Tom is back, and he says, if you bet on these lower leagues, you get your account restricted very quickly. How do you deal with that? I assume he might have been talking about the guy from Denmark you were talking about.
That's always the issue, really. And again, it goes back to what I was kind of talking about earlier, really, with cards. And this is where I think I differ from a lot of kind of professional punters, and that's where I will have my main plays, my serious plays, my day-to-day plays, which I really kind of count on, but I'll also kind of chuck in a few wobblies as well to kind of hopefully disguise my account a little bit. And if that's the case of kind of, again, dipping into bet builders and stuff. So let's just say the numbers are saying that Rochdale are a great price at 2.6 this weekend. The best price in the industry is 2.7. Certainly you want to get a Rochdale at 2.7. If you go into a bet builder and you get that 2.7, let's say it's with a soft book like 365, their best price on the 2.7. Just go into the bet builder, take the 2.7, but just chuck in something which is actually going to happen, obviously going to happen, over 1.5 goal, over 0.5 goals, for example. If Rochdale are going to win, there's going to have to be a goal in the game. Little things like that, which can hopefully throw them off the scent. But yeah, it's always going to be an issue. And again, there are, as I said to you before, I think on a previous show, I like to occasionally, if I haven't got a view, there's nothing wrong with having a recreational flutter on a game. If I haven't got a view on a game, which I'm going to be watching, I'll often just kind of throw a cheeky tenner, a first goal scorer, a centre half, a 40-1, little things like that, just to, because I know, I like to bet for fun as much as the serious nature of it and to make money, but also I know that in the long run, that's probably going to help my account stay alive for a bit longer than if I continue to sort of try and beat the market in these lower leagues.
Yeah, I remember you saying that last time. I think that was really valuable advice. I think you mentioned correct scores too, and another good way of proofing your account. So this is something that you're doing, you know, basically every week to try and, I mean, it's a shame that you kind of have to do these things, but it's almost like a part of the mastery of betting, isn't it? Like sometimes the hardest part is just keeping your accounts, not actually finding yourself an edge.
Yeah, it is. And it is difficult. I've lost a few accounts, and you can go through the whole rigmarole of trying to get a new account. And you know, there's various ways in which people can kind of go around it. I just haven't got the interest to do that. I haven't got the stamina to kind of keep going and trying to find new accounts, etc. So I'm really, really keen to try and keep the accounts I have, certainly with some of the bigger firms, because they are really, really valuable. So if you've got to do these little bits and bobs to try and keep them, then I think it's well worth doing them. If you're obviously keeping your stakes sensibly, there are ways around it, And yeah, I don't just hope that no one's watching and sort of commenting on and reacting to it. But I don't suppose they would be. But yeah, it's just a, you've got to be wise. But at the end of the day, you know, if you're going to continuously beat the market, you've got to expect your account to be restricted at some point. That's just how things are at the moment. It's not the right thing to go about it from the operator's perspective, but you can kind of understand both sides of the story. I've been on the other side of the fence as well, so I've heard things said from the operator's perspective, and you know, it's, I can see both arguments. So you just got to be smarter than those guys. Try and be a bit savvier about how you operate. And if that's the case of just putting a couple of quid on a golfer at 400 to one each week, or a first goal scorer at 40 to one, whatever it might be, whatever you have interest in, just to save that account, then why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. No, very, very good advice, mate. I think the bet builder thing is, yeah, something very unique and something definitely worth looking into for people out there. Richard has come back again and he says, what sort of volume does Mark bet, say, on the average Saturday? And he has had any restrictions on all his soft books. Number of bets, not value in dollars.
Yeah, it can depend, really. I try not to have a huge amount of volume, just for my... my mental state, really.
Just for the heart.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd say it ranges between a six and a dozen, I'd say, on a Saturday. If I go over a dozen bets, yeah, I am sort of twitching a little bit. That can be difficult, particularly if you've got a long shortlist and it's kind of grading each bet to see where the value is and trying to extract how much value you've got in each bet to grade them by, and then sort of taking the plunge from there. And more often than not, you'll kind of look back on a Saturday night and go, oh, I should have taken that bet and this one didn't. And but at the end of the day, it's judgment, really. So yeah, I'd probably say a dozen max. That's more than I can probably take. As I say, I like to try and watch as many as my bets unfold as well. But not just that, I'll have a certain games which I have to watch from a work perspective too. If I know I'm going to be talking about a certain team or a certain match the following Sunday night or the following Wednesday, etc. So it can be hard to kind of keep on top of everything. So, and what was the other question? Restrictions. Yeah, I've had a few, and it's just a case of learning through experience of what's triggering in those restrictions. You know, I thought prop bets were the best thing, really, coming into the industry from a football perspective in the last 12, 18 months. And I really enjoyed the sort of new approach. I'm not a big American sports punter at all, but certainly that was kind of feeding into football-based things, being able to back over-unders on shots and passes, on tackles, that kind of thing. And we put a lot of emphasis on that last year and got two accounts pretty much restricted and closed very, very quickly. And, you know, I think that was a lesson, really. I shouldn't have gone in all guns blazing. And so, yeah, I've lost those accounts. So, you know, it's just how it goes, really. So it's a case of just trying to be a bit more sensible about things. And as I say, use those kind of techniques to disguise a few bets as well to keep the ones that I have got.
Yeah. True Ride has said, in sports trading, what is the best strategy for bank management over time and bank size to start football market? Thank you from Nigeria. Good to have you along, mate.
Amazing, we go out to Nigeria. You're in Australia, I'm over here. So I always say you need to be starting with at least 100. If we're talking about units, 100 units in your bank to begin with, as a minimum, really. And then it comes down to bank management. And everyone works differently, obviously, but trying to find the right words to put this across. I'd always advise kind of trying to start your punting with 100 units in your bank. Personally, I bet from a sort of 1-5 staking system, 5 being the max bet, which I'll be honest, rarely gets used. More often than not, my bets are around the sort of 2-2.5 units. Anything above that, I need to be pretty damn confident and pretty damn confident in my prices compared to what the market is offering, because let's be honest, if you're if you're saying this bet should be 3-1, where the market is offering 6-1, that's a significant difference to kind of question your own pricing. It's rare they make that kind of mistake, really. There obviously is a few low-hanging fruits that you can kind of grab, but that's when I would probably go the extra mile just to check what I might have missed. More often than not, you'll find what you've missed. Might be a certain player's missed out, or the management might be talking about resting players, that kind of thing. So, is that answering the question?
I assume so. Yeah, and for those who don't understand the unit staking system, I guess let's just say you have $100, then one unit, or sorry, yeah, $100, and you've got 100 unit bankroll, then yeah, you'd be one unit is $1. So instead of assigning actual dollar values to people with different size bankrolls, then you have a an easy way to compare, yeah, staking and stuff like that. Yeah, so how do you kind of, are you like, obviously you've got your own models and stuff like that, so they're spitting out what kind of prices that you want to be, that you're interested in for a match. Like, how do you, is it kind of a case of the bigger the price discrepancy between your price and the bookie's price, then you'll take a bigger stake, if you get what I mean? Or obviously you're probably taking into account the odds too. So how do you, can you maybe explain, go in a bit more depth of how you're going into the 1-5 ranking?
Yeah. Okay. So, I think you pretty much nailed it there. In fairness, it's a case of, you know, the difference between my price and the market price, really. And the bigger the difference, the bigger the bet, really, because the more value you're getting, the more you should be staking, really. It's just a case of trying to equate how much value is in each bet. And value is that overused word in the industry, which everyone talks about, but I'm not sure there's a huge amount of understanding about what it actually is. And I think a lot of recreational punters at times will have certain rules about their betting and say, I'm not going to bet anything at 1.8 or lower. Whereas in fact, value can come at any price at all, really. A great example today, actually, for the gold service, which I run, I noticed this morning that Denmark playing Moldova, Denmark around 1.1 to win that game. So basically saying they've got a 90% chance of winning that match. Sort of shopping around, there was an opportunity to back Denmark to win to nil at 1.63, whereas the rest of the market was offering odds around 1.4 on the same selection. I sort of crunched a few numbers, put it in. My numbers were saying it should be 1.42, pretty much bang in line with what the market was saying. So there was a significant difference between what the market was offering compared to what this particular bookmaker was offering compared to what my tissue was saying as well. So, a lot of people would sort of snub and turn their nose up at a 1.63 shot. But the reality is that's value. It doesn't matter if it's 1.63 or 6.63. There's a difference there between what the market is offering and what your numbers are saying too. So then it's just a case of trying to see how much, what the difference is, and trying to work out the perceived value of each bet. So, I mean, that's really what goes into it. And if there's only a very slight edge, then obviously you can tone down the stakes, but also sort of the bigger price, even if there is a big difference there, I don't tend to bet too many units on sort of obviously big long shots or outsiders, etc. Even if there is a significant difference between what I've got and what the market is saying, I kind of feel a little bit more at home sort of trusting my prices on favorites or shorter prices, really. I'm not sure I've got the minerals to be back in long shots at big prices, even if my numbers are saying it, if I'm doing it too often. It might be a bit of loss aversion there, but I kind of trust my numbers when they're low numbers.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast. It was the Business of Betting podcast, actually, and his name was Julian. He's a professional sports bettor. I think this came out like 2 months ago, and he said, I think the best thing, like, any sports bettor can do, like, no matter what your level is just to always find the best price. And he was saying that I reckon if you did that every time, every bet you want to place, no matter if it's a hunch or a tip, or you've got some fancy model or whatever, if you're always finding the best price in the long term, you're probably going to be at worst like a slightly losing punter. And if you've got those cases, like you said there, where, you know, Denmark to nil is 1.63 somewhere and everyone else got it at 1.4, like, although that's only 20 cents of price difference, it's actually quite a big edge. That's, in terms of sports betting, that's quite a huge edge. So I think that's just, I mean, there's so many like little things like that where you can take your betting to the next level. And I just think that's something that people don't even take into consideration. Most people, like 99% of punters, have probably, you know, never even heard of something like Odds Checker or Odds Portal or, yeah, whatever odds comparison site you can get your hands on. So, yeah, I think, yeah, it's really, really good advice there, mate. Tom Berry. Good question here. I think, would Mark have any betting based or any betting psychology book recommendations?
It's a good question. I'm behind on my betting book reading. Quite embarrassingly so, actually. I've got all the books, but I've barely got through a few chapters in most of them. But I'm reading the kind of famous Thinking Fast and Slow at the moment. Daniel Kahneman, I think it is, which is good. It's a pretty tough read, but it's really interesting, actually. And it's all about sort of betting psychology. It's not actually betting related, but there are various elements which you can certainly apply to it. And it's something I've kind of learnt that I need to improve on this season, particularly, certainly since starting the gold service. I think it's, whenever you're sort of talking about betting and sort of sharing your ideas and your approaches and also your bets on, let's say, the Matchbook podcast, Betfair podcast, any column you're writing, anything public, I'm always very wary of it. Whilst no one's actually been paying me directly for that kind of content, they're kind of trusting me and trusting my work and trusting my research. And it does kind of weigh heavily on you, but certainly since starting the gold service, it's weighed heavier on me than normal. And at times I've struggled with my own psychology in terms of being indecisive rather than being decisive. I've certainly been aware of trying to deliver a service which is really more than just a tipping service, really, and probably at times overlooked certain opportunities which I've taken privately but not shared them with members, which has really just sort of disappointed me, really. And it's all about being a bit less decisive. And yeah, it's something I've kind of struggled with personally. Certainly reading that book is improving things in that regard. But I've got a few, I'm trying to look at my bookshelf at the moment, which I've either started or not completely finished. Logic and Sports Betting, Edge, I can't read the Fool by Randomness as well. There's a few, but to be honest, I've been really poor in sort of finishing books. We often start them and never get to finish them for various reasons, so apologies on that. But the one right now is quite an intellectual read, but there's some really good stuff in there, so I'm hoping to get that finished before football gets back next week. Thinking Fast and Slow, that is.
Yeah. I on the topic of, I've always wanted to ask you this question, and it's something to just come to my head now, is when because you're obviously a very popular man with your match previews going on the Matchbook podcast and all this kind of stuff. Are you like, how do you obviously, I assume most of the time when you're putting out these picks, like the prices are probably coming in quite quickly. How do you then judge? So like your closing line value is sometimes or could be based upon just people, you know, the betting market following you. Do you kind of do you think that happens for one and two? Like, how do you go about combating like whether it's like true closing line value?
Good question. I don't think I'm not arrogant enough to believe that I can move markets in that regard. So certainly with the Matchbook podcast, we're very much restricted in sort of looking at Asian handicaps, total goal lines, 1x2, which are your kind of your most liquid markets, really. So, I think I've always kind of fascinated, particularly, I should say, actually, in all these podcasts, quite often you're asked to have an opinion and share a view on matches you might not normally have a bet on. And particularly the Premier League is so hard to find an edge on, because it's one of the most liquid in the world, really. So all the money goes into it. So, but still, I do kind of track what I do put up. I'm very honest on it on the show as well. I'll certainly say whether, I make it pretty clear if I'm sort of really behind the bet, or if I'm not really, or I don't want to have a view. But if I was to have a view, this is it. Because I know a lot of people listen who might not be sort of full-time professional punters or anywhere close to that. They might just want to, as we talked about earlier, just have a little flutter on a game just for a bit of interest, really. So I think it's important to be honest and transparent in terms of, this is a bet I really like, or this isn't a match I really would have a view on, but if I did, this is probably what I'd go down. Despite all of that, I still kind of try to track my bets and also try to track the market as well. We record on a Thursday morning, and quite often those games are taking place on Sunday afternoon, so it's quite fascinating to see where the market does go. And I wouldn't say a lot of occasions, because that would be lying, but certainly a few, you've seen it kind of move in your direction. And that can just be the fact that we've got on early and the market hasn't fully matured yet from, let's say, the midweek sessions, and we've got a bit of team news on our side, or I've spotted something for certain team are playing on a Thursday night in the Europa League, and this game is taking place at a midday on a Sunday, so rest is going to be an issue and there's going to be changes, little things like that. There's always an advantage to bet early, and I think that's something which is quite advantageous about recording those podcasts on a Thursday morning, is we're almost there at the front of the queue, particularly after a midweek card. I know some people will be straight on it on a Sunday night after Sunday's football for the following week, but I don't know if that answers the question. On some of the other markets, it's very difficult to know, really, and I wouldn't dig too deep into closing lines, etc., because you're sort of betting on soft books and certain, say, bet builders or those kind of equivalents, really, for a bit of interest for the recreational types. So, it's not something I dig too deeply in that regard.
Yeah, no, you answered it very well, mate. Daniel says, hi, everyone. I will start my trader part-time on Tuesday. Football and horses will be my top bets, 2.5 of my balance or less for each bet. So there's a bit of a staking talk there from Daniel. We've got a question here from, do you want to try pronounce that name, mate, or do you want to give me a crack?
Nicodemus Antonides.
Yeah, I reckon you've done probably a better job than I could do, mate. So, he has said, some punters say everything is in line, that smart books reacting constantly to bets that receive maybe is more efficient to monitor the line than to form an opinion. So I don't know how to interpret that question exactly, but you go ahead, mate, on what you think the answer is.
There's various ways, in which you can approach betting. And I know I'm not particularly unique, but I also know that there's the way I go about my business could be very different to, let's say, you talked about earlier, Nigel Seeley goes about his business. You, Alex, the way about you go about finding your value bets as well. There's a lot of different ways. There's no one set way in which you can do things. And certainly what Nicodemus is saying there is true. There's people I know who do things very, very differently to how I do them and have great success in them. And that's all from following the market and spotting inefficiencies in their own way, based purely on odds. And odds movements, really. It's not something that I've kind of ever been. I think what's in my world, at least, I've got to be passionate about what I'm doing and really kind of enjoy the process. And what I do right now is I really enjoy the research. I really enjoy digging deep into the data and the form lines and the stats, as well as the markets and sort of tracking previous prices and looking at closing line prices and certain teams and certain scenarios and building a big picture in my own sort of way. So there's various ways in which you can try to beat the market, and not all of them all of them can be successful in their own way. It's just how you interpret it in your own way. So what you're saying there is fine. I'm sure works for many, many people as well. But it's not something that I've, let's say, have ever really kind of had the passion to do that. I've always wanted to go do things a little bit differently.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of more of a trading perspective of your betting. It's not as much knowledge and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's not for everyone. Neil is here. He says, what would Mark say are the biggest red herrings in terms of pre-match stats and analysis and where casual bettors are misled with their relative importance to a game?
Yeah, good question. Again, I think interpretation or intuition of what you're looking at is everyone's different about how they approach their business. And I think the biggest, I wouldn't say I've learned, but certainly something I've moved away from, let's say when I started 10, 12 years ago, really, is head-to-head records. They're everywhere, really, on all the sort of stats websites. You know, here's what happened in the last 50 years when Arsenal played Tottenham and stuff. When in reality, the what are you really going to glean from a game that happened 25 years ago, really? Nothing at all. In fact, what are you going to glean from a game that happened between the same two teams 5 years ago? Very, very little. Almost the same as what happened in a reverse game in the same season between two teams, because we talked earlier about how managers change, players change, systems and tactics change. Now you've got certain games taking place behind closed doors, and there's so many different elements. Like, one game is never going to be the same as the next game. And I think, you know, people can be a little bit misled and read too much into it. But I've also seen a few people who sort of live and die by head-to-head data and head-to-head stats as well. So what works for me doesn't necessarily work for other people. And the same can be said for head-to-head data. It's just, I think there are a few spots where it can be really helpful. I think the Clasico, Barcelona, Real Madrid, certainly in the Messi and Ronaldo era, was very good for that. You had a decent idea about how those games were going to unfold, because most of the players stayed the same. And whilst the coaches changed, the sort of stature of the fixture was always very similar. So, but that's kind of gone out the window now as well. So I think there's very few games now where I would look at a head-to-head record and think I could learn something from this. It's more often than not something I just chuck in the bin. Especially if you're watching, you know, certain shows over here, let's say Soccer Saturday, where the results are coming in, and you say, oh, Cheltenham haven't won a Barrow in 48 years and they're behind 1-0, who would have thought it, kind of thing. It's like, well, it makes absolutely no difference the last time Cheltenham won a Barrow. Like, absolutely has no bearing on what's going to happen in that game. So there's probably a few others I just can't think off the top of my head, really.
I was gonna say, as an Arsenal fan, they are the greatest example of where you should just never use head-to-head form, at least this season, because if you talk to any Arsenal fan this season, they'll talk to you about pre-Boxing Day and post-Boxing Day Arsenal. They are like unbelievably different sides. We're talking about pre-Boxing Day, you're talking about a team who was, if you looked at the underlying data, I think they were like 15th or 4th, something like that. And post, we're talking about maybe, well, very close to the second best side in the Premier League, maybe second or third, or in the top four at least. So there's not even like they're not even gone from 15th to mid-table or top six. Like, it's the difference is just incredible.
It's with the eye test as well, Alex, as well. Yeah. You can see certainly in how they're playing. There's a team there who is timid, almost defensively minded in the first part of the season, and, you know, lift off scraps going forward. Nowadays, they're very much you know, full of energy, quite flamboyant in their approach going forward. And I guess the integration of Martin Odegaard and has helped there. But the emergence of Smith Rowe and other players like that, Saka as well.
He was the big one.
They're chalk and cheese.
Yeah, that's all. Literally all he did was he put a number 10 in there who could actually play number 10. And Smith Rowe's, I think he's 20, 21. It's been an amazing transformation. But we won't wax lyrical about Arsenal or people who really start to leave. Tom Payne says, any Anzi post bets still in play for this year, mate?
Yeah, I have a couple. Peterborough in League One, Cheltenham in League Two. in the Championship. I've got Brentford, but Norwich look like they've already signed that one up, unfortunately. There's a few. I mean, there has to be a few, really. I've chucked enough darts out in July, August time in terms of my anti-posts. Yeah, there always is. In terms of right now, I wouldn't really be able to say with any certainty because I haven't looked at the longer term markets for a while now. It was on my list to do in the international break, and I've just decided not to really. But yeah, I mean, it's normally my favourite part of the season. Actually, is I talked about earlier the month I take off, or the month before the start of the season, where I start my prep. Really, go through each league. Give each league a full week really to kind of go through and dig into each team and rate my teams 1 to 24 and certainly look at where the outright markets are and place your team winners, your league winners and your each way shots and your relegation shots, but also like to sort of mix and match in terms of, I think like any punter likes to, you know, there's always a nice, something nice to kind of cling on to throughout the season in terms of pick your league winners and various each way shots as well. So last year I landed the jackpot really, first time ever. Kind of got
I remember you saying that on the podcast.
Yeah, so it's not going to happen this year, unfortunately, but hoping to get two of the three up at least. So should be some nice money, hopefully, to collect at the end of May. But a lot of football still to be played.
Yeah, congratulations on that bet, by the way, mate. That was, I remember you talking about it when you came on in this time last year, and you were hoping the game was, the season was even going to be finished. And luckily for you, it did, mate.
Well, I was so fortunate, really, because the two of the league winners were awarded it on points per game. So,
because
they didn't finish their league. So, if they hadn't, then those bets probably wouldn't have landed. And I was even fortunate enough to be paid out because a lot of firms, well, actually almost all the operators paid out their anti-post bets as a standard, really, which was really quite nice of them because they didn't have to at all.
Yeah. Question here from Neil, and just a last call for questions from people. We'll try and wrap this up. Mark's given a lot of his time away so far. He's probably got a very dry mouth over there. He's been speaking a lot. He goes, so Neil has asked, do you think this year of COVID football will have long-term ramifications for leagues when they return to normal? Or do you think goal-scoring trends and home advantage will be restored as it was? Interesting question, I think.
Really interesting question. Something we've already been talking about privately. People, as I mentioned earlier in the show, really experienced people in the industry which you trust, which you try to glean information from as well. I've certainly been asking this question as to their opinions, and the answer is people don't really know right now. Just as we did kind of going into lockdown, we didn't really know how football would look. We suspected home advantage would erode. Wasn't probably quite as prepared for how much it did erode, particularly domestically here in the UK. Probably undervalued it, and I think it was probably undervalued up until the turn of the year, actually, in 2021, really, when probably the markets really started to understand that home advantage was pretty much eradicated across the major leagues, even at the top level. So you're only giving a very, very slight edge to teams at home, which really surprised me, actually. Will it bounce back completely? My hunch right now is it won't. I think there's definitely going to be, I don't think it'll go back to the same level as it was. And if it will, it will take time. I think we've seen, it's been quite refreshing, really, seeing the amount of away victories and goals that teams away from home are scoring. I'd like to think that can continue, but I do understand there's been a lot of literature about home advantage and how it is influenced by the size of a crowd. And you can see that actually in just using the UK as an example again, but the Premier League, if you look at just raw numbers of home wins compared to away wins, it's pretty much even this season. But the further you go down the pyramid, home advantage is still prevalent, just not quite as high. And I'm sure, I can't remember the essay that was written, the title of it, but it basically suggested that down to about crowds of about 5,000, home advantage had more bearing when there was 50,000 crowds compared to when there was 5,000 crowds. So the size of the crowd does play a part. So I'm certain it will kind of bounce back, but I'm just maybe it's just hope and expectation that I don't think it will bounce back to the same levels as it was. Because I look back as well, home advantage was operating around the sort of 45 to 48% mark in some seasons, which is quite significant, really. I'd like to think that the home win percentage would sort of settle around 42%-ish, 44%-ish. Whether it will or not, I'm not sure, but I'd be surprised if it was an immediate turnaround. You know, if we're getting crowds back in for the start of the new season in August, I would be surprised if it would just immediately revert to normal figures again.
Yeah, because I guess one of the big advantages with having a home game is, like, not obviously you get the crowd, but if the crowd's gone, you still have the travel factor too. But I guess in the UK, like, I mean, it's not the biggest place in the world, is it? So, like, in terms of having to travel long distances, it's probably not going to have that much of an effect. So the crowds maybe is like the biggest advantage, I guess, you get of playing at home.
Yeah, it is. It's also has an effect on the referee as well. We've certainly seen that in terms of cards given. If you look down history, the away team is always carded more often than the home team, whereas nowadays it's very much on an even keel as well. But you're right, travel was something that I was quite keen to sort of look towards as a potential reason why home advantage would continue. But nowadays as well, certainly in the Premier League, these big teams, whether they're playing home and away, is irrelevant. They're still staying in hotels, team hotels, on a Friday night before a Saturday game, which has changed a lot in the last decade, for example. I don't know for certain, but I would suspect, let's say, the Arsenal example, they'll stay in the team hotel on a Friday night and kind of travel together as a team on the Saturday after having a team meal in the morning and kind of going through their last. Very, very rarely now do Premier League teams stay in their own bed on a Friday night before a game, even if they're playing at home. And there will be a few examples for sure, but I think that's just something that's changed as football has modernised, really. So I've always thought if you're staying in your own bed, you're going to be most comfortable before a game on a Saturday. But those kind of examples are there's not many examples of that these days. So yeah, it's hard to really know. what bearing it has these days, but that was something that I was definitely keen to bang the drum on, which I've had to kind of go back in my shell and realize I was probably wrong back 12 months ago with home advantage.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty of people were, mate. Zorba says, hi guys, Mark, is there a way to decide between Asian handicap lines without knowing the historical win percentages for MO? Is that money line price bands? I'm not too sure what MO stands for. Match odds, sorry, price bands. How do you decide which Asian handicap line to go with?
That's a heavy question.
right at the end too.
let me read it again. Is there Asian handicap? I'm not sure how. excuse me. I'm not sure how to answer that, to be honest. I can just tell you my process, really. excuse me. So as I said at the start, I have data which I power my model with, which gives me a supremacy and a rating, and it spits out prices, basic prices, really, which then I can build from. But those prices will give me a basic a basic price for 1x2 bet it for match odds. I can compare it with the market. It also give me a kind of guide line, if you like, for the Asian lines as well. But in terms of me personally, I'm a pragmatic punter. I like to take the the safe option more often than not. That's just in my nature, really. So if there's a half ball opportunity at even money, I'll quite often take the. So if there's a quarter ball option at even money, I'll quite often sort of get the half ball on side at 175, 180 instead. Just knowing that I've got more on my side, really. I'm happy to sort of take the smaller wins and build my bank that way rather than sort of be too aggressive in terms of price and line, which has worked for me. And I know I certainly work with people, good, successful people in the industry who take a alternative approach and will always be the most aggressive in terms of where they think the best lines are at. And as I said earlier, everyone's got their own way of working and what they feel most comfortable with and what they deem as a success, really. So I will always take the kind of safer option more often than not in that regard. So yeah, it's just that's how I approach things, put it that way. I don't know if that suits Zorba or not, but I'm a pragmatic punter by nature. Puncher.
Classic, mate. I think we've done you in here, mate. You've got the dry throat. It's all happening. So maybe we can call it a day there, mate. And so sorry for those who we haven't been able to get to your questions today. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Maybe where people can find you or any big projects you've got coming up, mate?
So 2021 is going to be quite a busy year at the moment. We've already sort of started progress on our next project, which is the Euros preview magazine. We've done two previously for major tournaments that we'll have betting for the last World Cup and the previous Euros as well, which have gone down really, really well. Got a great designer on board who has done a wonderful job in the last two magazines, and he's already sort of started making headway, already started writing some content for that myself, already sort of forming opinions on the competition too. So that's certainly something we're going to be working towards before the end of May. I think we'll be launching it before the 1st of June, probably, depending on the calendar and what goes in. So not long away now at all. So that's what I'm working on behind the scenes at the moment. But otherwise from that, it's just kind of business as usual. Between now and the end of May, then we've got the Euros, and then the whole season starts again in August. So, I guess the easiest way to find me is just on Twitter, which is at Mark O'Hare. Very easy, just my name, really. My DMs are always open as well, and always kind of happy to help if anyone wants to drop any messages in there. Always happy to answer and point people in the right direction of certain things.
Yeah, I highly recommend Mark as a follow for anyone looking to, up their betting game. Lots of useful information you're putting out there every week that's completely free and very, very valuable, mate. So, yeah, definitely a very good account to be following people. But thanks, everyone, for watching. If you could or if you've enjoyed this, please give us a like. And if you're watching this back, on replay, feel free to give it a comment and ask any more questions about anything, really. We're always happy to answer questions. And of course, subscribe to the channel. Next week, I think I might be taking a week off. I only found out yesterday. It's the Easter weekend coming up, or at least in Australia it is. So get a nice four-day holiday, so that'll be good. So don't think we'll be doing Sunday streams next week, but plenty of content coming out for people to follow anyway, so that shouldn't be a problem. Thank you very much, Mark, mate. And just got a nice little compliment for you to finish off here from Neil. I've learned loads from Mark's pods and articles over the years, so there you go, mate.
Thank you.
Zorba says thank you for your answer, even though we were all a bit confused about it. It was a bit of a tough one to answer towards the end. But yeah, thanks everyone for watching, and we'll be back very soon.